Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing with Chapter 13, The Difficulties of the Mental Being, from Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, on page 395. Somehow, this chasm has to be bridged. And here, there are two possibilities for the mental being. One possibility is for it to rise by a great, prolonged, concentrated, all-forgetting effort out of itself into the Supreme. But in this effort, the mind has to leave its own consciousness, to disappear into another and, temporarily or permanently, lose itself, if not quite abolish. It has to go into the trance of samadhi. For this reason, the Raja and other systems of yoga give a supreme importance to the state of samadhi, or yogic trance, in which the mind withdraws not only from its ordinary interests and preoccupations, but first from all consciousness of outward act and sense, and being, and then from all consciousness of inward mental activities. In this, its inward gathered state, the mental being may have different kinds of realization of the Supreme in itself, or in various aspects, or on various levels. But the ideal is to get rid of mind altogether, and, going beyond mental realization, to enter into the absolute trance in which all sign of mind or lower existence ceases. But this is a state of consciousness to which few can attain, and from which not all can return. It is obvious, since mind consciousness is the sole waking state possessed by mental being, that it cannot ordinarily quite enter into another without leaving behind completely both all our waking existence and all our inward mind. This is the necessity of the yogic trance. But one cannot continually remain in this trance, or even if one could persist in it for an indefinitely long period, it is always likely to be broken in upon by any strong or persistent call on the bodily life. And when one returns to the mental consciousness, one is back again in the lower being. Therefore, it has been said that complete liberation from the human birth, complete ascension from the life of the mental being, is impossible until the body and the bodily life are finally cast off. The ideal upheld before the yogin who follows this method is to renounce all desire and every least velleity of the human life, of the mental existence, to detach himself utterly from the world and, entering more and more frequently and more deeply into the most concentrated state of samadhi, finally, to leave the body, while in that utter ingathering of the being, so that it may depart into the supreme existence. It is also by reason of this apparent incompatibility of mind and spirit that so many religions and systems are led to condemn the world and look forward only to a heaven beyond, or else avoid nirvana, or supreme featureless self-existence in the Supreme. But what, under these circumstances, is the human mind which seeks the divine to do with its waking moments. For if these are subject to all the disabilities of mortal mentality, if they are open to the attacks of grief, fear, anger, passion, hunger, greed, desire, it is irrational to suppose that by the mere concentration of the mental being in the yogic trance at the moment of putting off the body, the soul can pass away without return into the supreme existence. For the man's normal consciousness is still subject to what the Buddhists call the chain or the stream of karma. It is still creating energies which must continue and have their effect in a continued life of the mental being, which is creating them. Or, to take another point of view, consciousness being the determining fact and not the bodily existence, which is only a result, the man still belongs normally to the status of human, or at least mental activity. And this cannot be abrogated by the fact of passing out of the physical body. To get rid of mortal body is not to get rid of mortal mind. Nor is it sufficient to have a dominant disgust of the world, or an anti-vital indifference or aversion to the material existence. For this too belongs to the lower mental status and activity. The highest teaching is that even the desire for liberation, with all its mental concomitants, must be surpassed before the soul can be entirely free. Therefore, not only must the mind be able to rise in abnormal states out of itself into a higher consciousness, but its waking mentality also must be entirely spiritualized. This brings into the field the second possibility open to the mental being. For if its first possibility is to rise out of itself into a divine supramental plane of being, the other is to call down the divine into itself so that its mentality shall be changed into an image of the divine, shall be divinized or spiritualized. This may be done, and primarily must be done, by the mind's power of reflecting that which it knows, relates to its own consciousness, contemplates. For the mind is really a reflector and a medium, and none of its activities originate in themselves. None exist per se. Ordinarily, the mind reflects the status of mortal nature and the activities of the force which works under the conditions of the material universe. But if it becomes clear, passive, pure by the renunciation of these activities and of the characteristic ideas and outlook of mental nature, then, as in a clear mirror, or like the sky in clear water, which is without ripple and unruffled by winds, the divine is reflected. The mind still does not entirely possess the divine or become divine, but is possessed by it or by a luminous reflection of it, so long as it remains in this pure passivity. If it becomes active, it falls back into the disturbance of the mortal nature and reflects that, and no longer the divine. For this reason, an absolute quietism and a sensation, first of all outer action, and then of all inner movement, is the ideal, ordinarily proposed. Here, too, for the follower of the path of knowledge, there must be a sort of waking samadhi. Whatever action is unavoidable must be a purely superficial working of the organs of perception and motor action, in which the quiescent mind takes eventually no part, and from which it seeks no result or profit. But this is insufficient for the integral yoga. There must be a positive transformation, and not merely a negative quiescence of the waking mentality. The transformation is possible because, although the divine planes are above the mental consciousness, and to enter actually into them, we have ordinarily to lose the mental in samadhi. Yet there are in the mental being divine planes, superior to our normal mentality, which reproduce the conditions of the divine plane proper, although modified by the conditions, dominant here, of mentality. All that belongs to the experience of the divine plane can there be seized, but in the mental way and in a mental form. To these planes of divine mentality, it is possible for the developed human being to arise in the waking state, or it is possible for him to derive from them a stream of influences and experiences, which shall eventually open to them and transform into their nature his whole waking existence. These higher mental states are the immediate sources, the large actual instruments, the inner stations of his perfection, called in the Veda variously seats, houses, placings or statuses, footings, earths, dwelling places, sadhas, griha or kshaya, dhamma, padam, bhumi, kshiti. But in arriving to these planes, or deriving from them, the limitations of our mentality pursue us. In the first place, the mind is an inveterate divider of the indivisible, and its whole nature is to dwell on one thing at a time to the exclusion of others, or to stress it to the subordination of others. Thus, in approaching Sachidananda, it will dwell on its aspect of the pure existence, Sat, and consciousness and bliss are compelled then to lose themselves or remain quiescent in the experience of pure, infinite being, which leads to the realization of the quietistic monist. Or it will dwell on the aspect of consciousness, chit, and existence and bliss become then dependent on the experience of an infinite, transcendent power and conscious force, which leads to the realization of the tantric worshipper of energy. Or it will dwell on the aspect of delight, ananda, and existence and consciousness then seem to disappear into a bliss without basis of self-possessing awareness or constituent being, which leads to the realization of the Buddhistic seeker of nirvana. Or it will dwell on some aspect of Sachidananda, which comes to the mind from the supramental knowledge, will, or love. And then the infinite, impersonal aspect of Sachidananda is almost or quite lost in the experience of the deity, which leads to the realizations of the various religions, and to the possession of some supernal world or divine status of the human soul in relation to God. And for those whose object is to depart anywhither from cosmic existence, this is enough, since they are able, by the mind's emergence into or seizure upon any one of these principles or aspects, to effect through status in the divine planes of their mentality, or the possession by them of their waking state, this desired transit. But the sadhaka of the integral yoga has to harmonize all, so that they may become a plenary and equal unity of the full realization of Satchidananda. Satchidananda. Here, the last difficulty of mind meets him. Its inability to hold at once the unity and the multiplicity. It is not altogether difficult to arrive at and dwell in a pure, infinite, or even, at the same time, a perfect global experience of the existence, which is consciousness, which is delight. The mind may even extend its experience of this unity to the multiplicity, so as to perceive it immanent in the universe and in each object, force movement in the universe, or at the same time to be aware of this existence, consciousness, bliss, containing the universe and enveloping all its objects and originating all its movements. It is difficult indeed for it to unite and harmonize rightly all these experiences. But still, it can possess Satchidananda at once in himself and immanent in all, and the continent of all. But with this, to unite the final experience of all this as Satchidananda and possess objects, movements, forces, forms as no other than he, is the great difficulty for mind. Separately, any of these things may be done. The mind may go from one to the other, rejecting one as it arrives at another, and calling this the lower or that the higher existence. But to unify without losing, to integralize without rejecting, is its supreme difficulty. End of chapter 13, The Difficulties of the Mental Being, page 399.